Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Saxof Limited Q3 FY26 earnings conference call hosted by Monarch Networth Capital Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Vinay Menon from Monarch Networth Capital Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Monarch Networth Capital, it's my pleasure to host the senior management of Saxof. We have with us Mr. Aditya Krishna, Promoter and CEO, and Mr. Neeraj Kumar, CFO and COO of the company. Now, I'll hand over the call to Aditya, sir, for his opening remarks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Vinay. Hello and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our earnings call to discuss the performance of the third quarter and the nine months of financial year 2026. Let me start off by briefing you on the key business highlights for the quarter, after which my colleague and our COO and CFO, Mr. Neeraj Kumar, will brief you on the financials. The technology services environment today is marked by cautious enterprise spending and longer decision-making cycles, particularly for discretionary projects. At the same time, clients continue to invest in initiatives focused on efficiency improvement, automation, platform modernization, and practical adoption of AI, where there is clear business value. Against this backdrop, we delivered a steady performance during the first nine months of FY26, supported by healthy year-on-year revenue growth and stable operating margins. Even as near-term demand remains selective, we have continued with our planned investments in strengthening front-end sales capabilities and senior leadership. These investments are aligned with our long-term strategy of positioning the company as an AI-led digital transformation partner and building scale in the business. We remain confident of progressing steadily towards our Vision 2030 goal of achieving $500 million in revenues. From an operational standpoint, we made good progress across our verticals during the quarter. In the logistics segment, we secured a multi-year digital transformation engagement with a leading U.S.-based carrier focused on enterprise modernization, AI adoption, and cost optimization. In the commerce vertical, we partnered with a leading technology distributor to establish a joint AI innovation lab, enabling AI-driven initiatives across sales, IT, and finance functions with a clear path from pilot programs to scaled implementation. In our emerging verticals, we have started working with a leading telecom operator in the European region to deliver quality and process maturity transformation program across core operations. These engagements reinforce our role as a trusted long-term technology partner for our clients and give us confidence in our ability to grow wallet share as technology spending conditions gradually improve. While Neeraj will update on the operational metrics and the financial highlights for the third quarter and nine months ended FY26, let me apprise you of what gives us the confidence and clarity that we are steadily progressing towards our 2030 goal of $500 million. We mentioned now and in the past that we are expanding our long-term outcome-driven digital partnerships, expanding wallet share, and building annuity-led revenue streams through AI-enabled engineering, platform modernization, and managed operations. For us to do so, we have identified certain strategic long-term growth drivers based on which our annuitized revenues would multiply and margins would improve. Some of these growth drivers are scaling AI-led engineering, data operations, and intelligent operations, expanding the managed services and platform-led delivery models, investing in agentic AI and industry accelerators, and lastly, increasing multi-year engagements and vendor consolidation wins. The long-term and perpetual benefits of these will be felt in the years to come. Now, I would request my colleague Neeraj to give you the financial highlights for the quarter under review.
Thank you, Aditya, and thank you, everyone, for taking the time and joining our earnings call today to discuss the results of the third quarter and the nine months of the financial year 2026 under review. For the third quarter of financial year 26, revenues reported at around INR 250 crores, representing a growth of around 11% year-on-year. The EBITDA stood at INR 45 crores, which grew by around 19% year-on-year, with the EBITDA margins of 18.1%. On a sequential basis, revenues declined sequentially by around 3%, primarily due to a temporary slowdown in spending from two of our large customers. This was driven by timing and reprioritization of budgets rather than any project cancellations, and our engagement levels with these customers remain unchanged. Margins were impacted due to revenue softness during the quarter, along with the continued investments in growth initiatives, more feet on the ground in our key geographies of US and UK, and capability building for the future. The net profit for the quarter stood at around INR 29 crores, which grew by 7% year-on-year, whilst the PAT margins stood at 11.57%. The net profit for the quarter is after making a one-time exceptional provision of INR 4.86 crores towards the new labor code requirements. For the 9 months ended of the financial year 26, the operating revenues were reported at around INR 758 crores, representing a growth of nearly 18% year-on-year. The EBITDA stood at INR 142 crores, which grew by nearly 29% year-on-year, with the EBITDA margins being at 18.7%. The net profit was at INR 97 crores, which grew 24% year-on-year, with the profit after tax margins at 12.8%. Now coming to the revenue split by geography for the 9 months period. The Americas contributed 50% of our total revenues, whereas Europe contributed 29%, and the remaining 21% came from Asia Pacific and other regions. For the current 9 months period under review, we have remapped our customer locations basis the global location of the master service agreements with the respective customers. The on-site revenue mix was 44% and offshore is at 56%. The revenue split across verticals remained diversified. The BFS contributed 31%, the emerging verticals around 47%, logistics around 14%, and commerce around 8% of our total revenues. Now coming to some of our customer metrics, we have around 16 customers of USD 1 million plus in revenues. The total employee count at the end of the quarter stood at 2,673, out of which 2,454 were technical, with the utilization level of the employees, excluding trainees, being at 83% for the quarter 3 FY26. This concludes the updates on the quarter, and we can now open the floor for the Q&A session.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question comes from the line of Anand Bhaskaran from Shema Wealth Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Congratulations on the numbers. My question is for the FY26 and FY27. Where do you see the segment revenue going forward for this current financial year and the next financial year as well? Where would be BFSI, logistics, emerging, and commerce as a share of revenue would be?
We would expect it to be approximately at the same level as it is today. Only thing to note is BFSI is not our focus area. It's BFS. There's no I. So we are not focused on the insurance sector.
Okay. So you're saying like the next 2 years or so, the where it is now today, the revenue diversification would be around the same level as today.
Yes, mix would remain about the same.
Okay, I'll join back to the queue and have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jyoti Singh from Arihant Capital Markets Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So I just wanted to understand that our top 10 client contribution 58% of revenue. So like how much of the recent slowdown was within the top two clients, and what is the what are our plan on the client dependency? And are we seeing any early sign of spending recovery from large clients, and how's the feedback on that side? And another thing, how strong is the deal wins for calendar year 26, and what percentage is AI and digital transformation led?
The disappointment in our quarter three results, you know, we've had 20 quarters of quarter on quarter growth. So after 20 quarters, this was our first quarter of 3% decline versus the previous quarter. So quarter three was 3% lower in revenues versus quarter two. And it was primarily because there was deferment of spending by two of our top customers. Now, this is the biggest challenge as you scale up, because the focus is on growing revenues. It doesn't matter where it comes from. So even if our top customer gives us more revenues, we're going to take the revenue and not worry about increasing client concentration. So this problem will over time disappear as the business scales. You know, it's not something that we can eliminate in the short term. Now, having said that, both the clients have started to spend, or the spending is recovering. So it was just a temporary blip, and we're very hopeful that, you know, over the next few months, this will correct. Now, in terms of deal wins, we are participating in many more large deals than I would say 12 months ago. We are being invited to many more RFPs. We are being invited to many more larger opportunities, some of them around AI, some of them around vendor consolidation. And not only is our maturity on responding to these large deals improving, but our win ratio is also improving. I cannot give you the win ratio as of today because the numbers are still small. But from 12 months ago, the traction on larger deals responses by us has increased considerably.
Great. And sir, I wanted to understand on the margin side, are we expecting going forward will be revert to 19-20% as this quarter, or like you mentioned, consistent performance, but blip in this quarter. So what are expectation on the margin front?
Year to date, EBITDA margin is 18.7%. This quarter was 18.1%. Previous quarter was 19.6. So I would say between 18 to 20 EBITDA margin is something that, you know, we would try and maintain.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. I will come in again.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bharat Gulati from Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions on my side. Congrats on the recent set of results also. Just want to understand that how is AI getting implemented into our deal wins? Because what I understand in the industry that rather than AI just being used as a tool, now it's getting embedded into deals where it's helping bring in revenue. So have we started to also build some products or platforms that we license out to clients that are helping us get the same kind of recurring revenue?
We don't build any products, so there is no license revenue from any products that we build because we don't have products. But where we use AI is to deliver more efficiency to our clients, both existing customers as well as prospects. So very simply put, in testing or application development in digital engineering, what could have been done by, you know, a 50-member team can now be done by a 30-member team or a 35-member team using AI. You know, and that's what customers expect. So the software development lifecycle has become more efficient using AI. Now, if we don't use AI, we don't become relevant to the deal or to our customer. So it's a must-have. It's not a nice-to-have, it's a must-have. So that's in terms of using AI to deliver the services that we do to our customers as well as prospects. Now, is there spending on building an agent or using agentic AI, building an agent? I would say most customers are curious, but they're not really spending much on building AI agents because they don't see great value in one agent or two agents. They see value if the entire workflows of the business are, you know, made more efficient using AI. So the entire transformation of work is where we see value and long-term revenue as well as annuity revenue, not in one-off projects to build agents.
Got it. So can we say that the recent margin improvement is because of the use of AI and our utilizations have gone up? Or is it that we've started to just win higher contract deals? I mean, you know, what can we attribute to the higher margins in the recent quarters? And also just how will these margins trend going forward? Will they see an upward trend or is this where they stabilize at the 18% to 20% range?
I'll ask Neeraj to answer that, please. I'll request him.
Yeah. So Bharat, in terms of margins, you know, last couple of quarters we have seen a little higher margin. I think there's been a constant question on whether we'll be able to maintain this 19-20% margin. I think this is at a slightly higher end. The steady state would be around 18% or so, considering the investments which we are doing both on in a number of areas in terms of capability, feet on the ground, and a lot of other avenues. So I think 18% would be a more realistic margin. The reason for the improvements, yes, when we bring in our frameworks of AI and bring in some efficiencies in the short term, it is definitely helping in adding on margins. Added to it, I think, you know, the rupee factor has also been for the year. The rupee has been depreciating significantly. So that has also helped in adding to the margins. But I think from a mid to long term, 18% would be a more realistic margin base to be considered.
Got it. Fair enough. And just one final question. Our road to like $500 million. So is that going to be more, are we going to diversify our revenues, and, you know, is our top 10 customers revenues going to fall from 58%, or are we going to continue to see growing wallet share within them? And, you know, just if you can elaborate on how are we going to get to that 500 million mark? Is it going to be through new clients or existing clients increasing wallet share? Yeah. And also, what kind of an inorganic element will we see in that of 500 million vision?
The revenue growth will come from, you know, I would say 80 to 85% will come from existing customers. And there is enough runway with our top 20 customers to make that happen. We will obviously get new clients. Today we have 16 $1 million clients. We will definitely add to our client base to get to four times where we are, you know, 4.5 times where we are. So scaling up, you know, will not happen with just one customer. It will happen across the board, multiple customers, you know, growth in wallet share. So it'll be a and strategy, not an or strategy. But it'll be more, you know, I would say more prevalent towards increasing wallet share.
Got it. Thank you. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vikas Srivastav from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My question more on this 500 million, Aditya. Did I hear it right? Right, it's 2030. So I'm saying approximately we're talking about financial year 30-31. And you also mentioned that it will be 85% organic. So we are looking at a dollar revenue growth of about, to get there in this period with 4.5 times, we should be looking at a 26-27% organic growth year on year. My first question was on that in terms of our past and how well geared are we? Is it, again, I'm sorry, I'm repeating this question I asked this last time, is it within the realm of possibility or is it just a little ahead of our targets, our realistic targets? That was one question. My second question was on the three contracts. You know, in your investor's note, you had you have mentioned that the initiative and the two new contracts. If you could just, without naming the client, throw some light in terms of what these contracts are and what kind of visibility do we have with these three new client stroke initiatives. Fourth is, there is in the big clients, the top two clients, what I'm hearing is that there is no structural change. It is a short-term aberration, which would kind of, we'll catch up in the coming months. On EBITDA, I hear that, you know, last calls, I think you were more on the 17.5. Now you are on 18 to 20. Just a reconfirmation of that.
Let's start with the last one, Vikas. I stand corrected. We will be around 18%.
Okay. Which is a little higher than what we have done, you have promised in the past, or you are guided in the past.
That's right, yeah. And coming to the first question of 500 million, you know, it looks an uphill task considering where we are and our historic growth. Now, the way I look at this is, at this point, it's aspirational. You know, can we get to 500 million? Now, let's say we can't get to 500 million. At least we'll hit 400 million.
Got it.
Which is 3.5-4 times where we are today, which is not bad. You know, I'm not for a minute saying that we will not aspire to hit 500 million. All the effort will be to hit 500 million. But if it doesn't happen, we'll be at least better than where we are today significantly, because we are growing 15-20% year on year. Now, we have learned how to grow 15-20% organically. If we can tuck in a couple of, you know, reasonably sized acquisitions, let's say we tuck in a, you know, 300 crore acquisition, 250 crore acquisition, we can really sort of improve the growth rate, you know. And historically, we have always done these acquisitions through internal accruals, and we will continue to do that. So, do we have a strategy? Have we identified any targets? The answer is no. But opportunities will come, you know, and we are ready for them. We have the management bandwidth to evaluate and integrate these companies if it was to happen. So, you know, we are operating on multi-channels towards the goal of 500 million. I still remain very hopeful that we will achieve the target, if not 500 million, close to that. What doesn't help us in meeting the target is that the rupee keeps depreciating, but that helps us in other ways in terms of EBITDA targets. Coming specifically to your questions around the three contracts, the first one, which was with a US carrier, is very interesting because this was a customer of ours who had multiple vendors, or multiple suppliers, and they floated an RFP to consolidate suppliers. We won that RFP, so our team size grew from 50 people to over 100. But to win that RFP, we had to give a 20% discount on our rates. Now, that is the name of the game. So we, to get this business and to win this, we had to give a discount, which we will make up with efficiency over the next 3 years, because this is a 3-year contract. You know, and once we are wedded into the customer, you know, the incumbency sort of, and we do a good job, there is no reason why, you know, we should not be able to renew it after 3 years. The second contract is where we are building an AI innovation lab for one of our new customers. This is also very interesting because the customer is keen to not only build this innovation lab, but also to grow the innovation lab and use it to improve their business workflows in different parts of their business. So we see this as very sticky and long-term nature. The third one?
Telecom.
The third one was a telecom operator in Europe, where we are doing business transformation from an optimization perspective. That's a new customer. It's a small contract. We hope that, depending on the quality of our work, we will be able to increase our revenues there and grow that account. But that's the smallest out of the three.
Got it. And the last question was on this, just a reconfirmation, and that this the top three customers was more of a few months or a few, 1 or 2 quarters aberration. There's no structural change in terms of consolidation or other reasons why the revenue from those three customers has fallen in this quarter.
Yeah, this is just a temporary phenomena. That's how we know it today, Vikas. But we have to also keep in mind that we are continuing to invest, because we need to invest to get to 500 million. Now, when I say investment, it's investment in capability. It's investment in senior talent. You know, my biggest challenge, we are now close to a 1,000 crore company. The challenge at 100 crores was talent. The challenge at 1,000 crores is talent. Okay, it's just that quality and degree of talent. If there is one thing that keeps me awake at night, it is talent. Now, talent is becoming very expensive, and that expense comes before revenue. So there will be some compromise. Unfortunately, being a listed company, we have to live quarter on quarter. So there will be volatility in earnings. There will be volatility in the stock. But if our shareholders believe in the management and they believe in our goal and where we are headed, then, you know, we should be okay. I think that's really the bet, you know, people on this call have to understand and appreciate.
No, thank you for that, Aditya. One small housekeeping request. The investor's presentation is never released with the quarterly result, which keeps us a little, you know, some of the information which you put out in the investors is actually quite relevant to the shareholders. And it's a little bit of a challenge to locate it and get it a few hours later. May I just request, like many other companies, if we can just, release both of these together so that, you know, then we understand the results a little better and the reasons a little better. You know, that's the practice generally. You know, the management commentary and presentation is released almost with most cases together. And I'll come back in the queue. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Priyam Srivastav from KC Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So my question is similar to the margin trajectory. Can you describe how the nature of your work has fundamentally changed over 5-6 years? Because we see the margins have moved from like 13-14% to 17-18% now.
Okay, good question. And, it's a question which, you will find the answer quite interesting. Most tech services companies want to stay away from providing bodies or providing just staff augmentation, because that is the lowest end of the value chain.
Yeah.
Now, how do you stop doing that? You know, if customers want bodies, can you really say, I can't give you a body, you know, and lose the business? So it's a difficult scenario to, you know, overcome. The way we are trying to do it, and we've had, I won't say great success, we had limited success, but we are getting better at it, is to try and push it towards outcomes. And where the customer doesn't interview our resource, the KPI or the yardstick that we have started to measure is the customer interviewing the resource. If the customer is interviewing the resource, that means we are in the lower end of the value chain. We need to stay in the upper end or move towards the upper end. And that's how we have seen that from the early days, 4 or 5 years ago, it was predominantly providing bodies. In some, you can call them anyway. You can call it staff augmentation. You can call it consulting. You can call it, you know, whatever. But at the end of it, it's bodies. That has now changed to outcome-based projects or outcome-based contracts. You know, like the AI Innovation Lab, like the vendor consolidation, like, you know, some of the new projects we're winning, and the more and more RFPs that we are responding to, which are around infrastructure, around help desk, service desk, desktop support, et cetera, et cetera. So the texture of our revenue has changed considerably towards outcome in the last, you know, I would say 4 or 5 years, and our goal is to continue to move in the in that direction to get to the upper end of the value chain.
Got it. Okay, yeah, that helps. Thank you so much. One more question was, when you talk about this fintech and health tech, can you just tell a bit of, little bit about what type of clients these are and just some example, like in some successful projects with them?
There is no health tech. We don't have any health tech, so you're confusing us with some other company. So in fintech, it is really BFS. So fintech is a part of BFS. And, you know, projects are the same, you know, digital engineering, quality assurance, infrastructure, cloud management, FinOps, cloud ops, data ops, you know, very similar to any other vertical.
Got it. Okay, that's clear now. Thank you so much. I think why don't we work with banks? Is there any specific reason we don't have bank clients much?
Say that again, please. I didn't understand. Can you repeat that question?
Do we have clients in bank segment as well?
Yes, we have two large banks as customers, one in India, one in Singapore.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Mahima from Alpha Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. So just wanted to understand, during the quarter, we have seen exits. Just wanted to understand your current stance on inorganic growth. So are you planning any acquisition?
We're always looking, Mahima. At this point, we don't have any specific target in mind. But we're always open to something that will help us build capability or acquire a significant customer at a reasonable price.
Okay, okay. Another question is, so during the quarter, we have seen a lower other income. So any reason behind that?
This is Neeraj. The primary reason for the decline in other income is the exchange factor. Almost 90% of that other income is the dollar rupee or the pound and euro rupee exchange gain. That was quite high in quarter two vis-a-vis what you are seeing in quarter three. That's the reason for the decline in the other income.
Okay, okay. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rohit from iThought PMS. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, Rohit.
Yeah, thank you, sir. So just want to understand on this, I think you answered this question earlier in some form, but just wanted to understand, given the whole the whole AI thing that is happening, so just in terms, I mean, so we are at the outside, and a lot of different things are coming out in terms of the way the code is being written these days, and how easy it is, and probably in terms of there is a lot of outcome-based stuff that can get more and more a challenge. So, I mean, just wanted to get your sense, given you are at the center of this. So, how are you doing this? You said that AI is not like, is almost like table stakes you have to have, otherwise you're not even relevant. So, like, how are you seeing this from your vantage point in terms of the kind of work that you do in terms of services? Will there be a case that a lot of the work that you are doing will probably get, lack of a better word, automated or in-house? I'm sorry, I'm not able to probably say the right word, but I hope I'm able to articulate what I'm trying to ask in terms of the kind of cannibalization or the kind of work extinction that can happen for you guys. Or is that even something that you're worried about, or that is not the case? Sorry for the long-minded question.
We're not worried about it for the simple reason that AI is not a nice to have. It's a must have. AI has to be prevalent in anything that we do for our customers, whether it is application development, whether it is testing. If we don't use AI and the improvement in in the workflows that AI provides, customers will no longer want to deal with us. So it's a necessary, I would just say that it's like any other, maybe there's a new language that has come in to disrupt the existing languages. So, I would just say AI is a hygiene factor. It's no longer a nice thing. It's no longer a buzzword. People talk about it because there is a lot of, unknown areas around AI, which the media likes, and it's a nice thing to talk about. For example, you would have seen the social media platform called Moldbook. That is an agent social media platform. So no humans are on it, only agents are on it. So now, what is the business model? Don't ask me. I have no idea. All I know is that for our services model, AI is a must-have. It's a hygiene factor. And it helps us cement our relationship with our customers, make our services more efficient and more cost-effective for our customers.
And you mentioned that in terms of the work that you're doing, a lot of it is getting transitioned to outcome-based kind of work. So can you give maybe a few examples of what kind of outcomes are these, and can you just maybe talk a bit more in terms of how these are priced then?
So, for example, let's take the case of a customer who has a ticketing system. Now, the customer will give us the ticket dump. They will give us, okay, over the last 1 month, they had 10,000 tickets. Now, they'll classify those tickets into different buckets, level 0, level 1, level 2, level 3, whatever. And they expect us to now manage that work for them based on SLAs. So response time for level 0, response time for level 1, level 2. Now, whether we use 5 people or we use 50 people, that's our problem. So now, can we use AI? Can we use automation? Can we use a combination of both to deliver it efficiently, not only to the customer to meet the SLA, but to make margins for us? So that is what I mean by outcome-based.
Got it. The other question was, so we've been talking about this $500 million and we've consistently talking about investing in the sales and marketing. And I think in the last probably 4 or 5 quarters, you've hired a few people as well on the senior side. So on the sales and marketing side, so can you talk a bit about how has that initiative, how that initiative shaping up, and anything that you can sort of call out in terms of that is giving you more confidence, or there is much more work to be done?
Yes. So our business model. Let's take one geography. Our business model. Let's say in North America. What's our business model? How do we go to market? We have our customers and each customer has a client partner. Now, one client partner could be managing either one customer or multiple customers. Normally, it's one or three. You know, in rare cases, it's 4 customers. Yeah. So now that client partner is responsible for growing wallet share with these customers. Now, how does he do that? He does that by regularly meeting customers and regularly understanding from the customer what their business problems are, problem statements are, and how we can use technology to overcome those business problems. The more he meets, the more problem statements he's able to unearth. Now, as we move up the value chain, you know, and I said this earlier, move up the value chain from providing bodies to outcome-based selling, the client partners also have to change their way of selling. Okay, so they have to be mentored, they have to be trained, they have to evolve into now selling outcome-based services rather than bodies. Selling bodies was easy. Now, some will graduate to be able to sell outcome-based, some will not. Our first job is to train them, mentor them. If they can't do it, we have to replace them. So that's an investment. The leader of the client partners is an investment. You know, we have hired a leader in North America. We're in the process of hiring somebody in the UK and Europe. Now, these two leaders will drive the client partners to grow wallet share with our existing customers. So most of our investment in sales and marketing will come in this form, either by client partners or leaders. And it's tough, not only to identify the right person, but also to work with that person to get him to understand the company. It takes time. You know, transforming from selling bodies to outcome-based is a transformation, you know, which, and it's a journey which you have to, go through, and we're in the process of doing that. So, you know, it requires both time and money. So the investment is happening in that direction, you know. That's on the front-end side. On the capability side, investment is also happening because we have 6 centers of excellence. We have testing, we have data, we have digital engineering, we have Salesforce, ServiceNow, cloud infrastructure and security. 6. There we are building accelerators. You mentioned about AI. Now, I gave you this simple answer of AI, that AI is a hygiene factor. But how do we now bring AI into application development? You know, coding is becoming easier. Can AI do the coding? Yes, but for that we need accelerators. We need frameworks. Who builds that? You know, these centers of excellence build that. That's an investment. So, you know, a lot of people think that tech services doesn't have investment. It's only in office space and laptops. No, the investment is really in people and building capability. And that's where, you know, we are also spending our money.
And just on this point around outcome.
Follow-up question, please rejoin the queue.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vikash Srivastav from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
you know, on the ROI, on the investment in salespeople, Aditya, you know, we had mentioned that in the last calls that we did, you know, there was attrition or we let go some salespeople, but you had a few recent hires. Just wanted to know, is our experience, A, in terms of who we've hired and in terms of getting traction from them and stability, are we up a little higher on the curve now? Are we in a better position than what we were a month or a quarter or two back? And are we kind of, is there traction and is there more visibility in terms of our people are hiring and their probability of success and settling within our, you know, system towards outcome-based selling?
For sure it is better, Vikas, but you know, I just want to clarify a little bit that, you know, the team that got us to 1,000 crores, it is not necessarily the team that will get us to 5,000 crores. Now, some will and some won't. Now, the challenge is, you know, jettisoning or letting go the ones that won't and bringing in the new talent that will get us there. And that is not a, you know, a switch on and off. It has to be done gradually. It has to be done in a nice manner, you know, because at the end of it, these are people. So we are on that process. We have made some big changes. So far, you know, everything seems to be on track. You know, I'm happy with the progress. The only thing I would say is I need to accelerate it more, you know, which I will do.
Oh, you know, I was actually alluding to the new hires in the last four quarters. I understand the transition and the, you know, and the training, and in terms of new hires, is that experience now been good in the last three, four quarters? That are the new incumbents kind of, or have you had some attrition there also? Just some idea there on the new hires and their absorption in the system.
In the last two quarters, we have only hired one person in the US geography, and so far so good. He's probably on this call also, Vikas, so he'll be listening in.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bharat Gulati from Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the follow-up, sir. Just wanted to get a clarification on one point. Like you mentioned that we won a RFP where the vendor consolidation was taking place, where we gave it a discount of about 20% of our typical price. So going forward, as we try to scale up and, you know, reach the 500 million mark, I just wanted to understand, we need to get into larger clients and we'll need to, you know, be cost competitive. So then do we see our margins tapering off, or then how do we see fight off the lower cost in terms of maintaining margins? If you can explain how we're going to do that.
There is no question that we might have to buy some contracts. So if there's an incumbent, we have to go in with strong capability, automation. For example, we have a AI voice bot. It does any language. It does the work of a call center. Now, we factor that in when we do automation for a prospect or a customer. Now, that's an example of how we will drive efficiency, reduce cost, you know, and we might have to buy that contract by giving in a lower price, but if it's a three, and most of these contracts that you buy would be 3-4 year contracts. So over that 3-4 year period, we will be able to drive efficiency into the model to make sufficient margin. So yes, on a particular deal, we might have to compromise on the margin, we might have to compromise on the price, but you know, we have to look at it from a perspective that if you're not in the game or you're not fighting the game, there is no way you can win, right? So you know, it's going to be a little bit of mix and match.
So, sir, just to understand that the deal that we just won, does that somewhat impact our near-term margins? Is that a headwind for us, or do we see that these efficiencies will still help us maintain that 18% kind of EBITDA?
Boss, think about it. There are 3,000 people in the company. We're talking about a 20% cut in 50 people. How will it affect margin?
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Anand Bhaskaran from Sema Wealth Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you for the follow-up question. I just want to ask about the India deal with both US and Europe. First, can you just say like how much we would gain from the company would gain from these two deals, and how will the company gain gains in these, like in specific detail, can you mention like what will be the impact of these two deals?
Can you repeat that question, please? It was a very unclear, the earlier part of your question.
Sorry. So the India's deal with trade deal with the US and Europe as well. So how would impact the company, and what sort of way it would impact the company? Would it be positive, negative, and what, and can you explain that in some detail?
Are you talking about the FTA deal?
Yeah, the FTA deal and the SRA's trade deal with US, both.
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, why would it affect us? I mean, trade is more for, goods, right? Services were not under tariff anyway.
Okay. What about with the FTA deal?
Isn't that the same thing? Where was the tariffs with Europe?
So, like, in any of the contracts that you have, there is no benefits or impact that the company would not have at all?
No, I'm trying to think while you're asking me this question, where will it affect? In other words, I mean, is there any work that we have not done with Europe because of tariffs? I don't know. I mean, services don't normally come under the tariff bracket. So, but I would say the only thing I would say is it can only be positive, because the fact that there is a deal means that there is a upbeat environment of spending with a partner like India. So I would say there will be more openness to use Indian suppliers as well as offshoring. So I'm just, thinking aloud, whether this will help. Can it hurt us? I don't think it should hurt us. Will it make European companies or European competitors to us more competitive vis-a-vis us? Unlikely. So I think it should be positive. But honestly, I haven't given it much thought.
Okay. And my final question is, in which geography would you focus more now in the next coming now? Currently, it is USA with 50%, Europe 29%, and APAC is 21%. Next, let's say FY 27, 28%. Would you focus on any specific geographical region, or will it be more or less the same?
I would put maximum focus on the US geography. Huge market, lots of potential, biggest market for the tech industry. So if I was to, if I had 100 rupees to put, I would put 95 rupees in the US market, just as an example.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Akshat Rohatki from Rational Equity Partners LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
We will be proud shareholders for Saxo for the last, 6 months. So congratulations on what you guys are doing. So my question is that we actually hold a lot of small and microcap IT services company in India, and we do a lot of research in what's happening in AI in the US. And talking to a lot of promoters in the last 2-3 months, we've been hearing that the theme of vendor consolidation is going across the board. Like a lot of enterprises are consolidating their vendors. they basically, so the thing that I'm hearing from promoters of Indian IT companies is they are consolidating vendors because they want to reduce their SaaS tools and basically get their data at a single unified place, and then they want to invest more into AI and into AI stuff. So what are you guys hearing across your clients and all? I wanted to know that.
Just if you can clarify, you said that they want to keep all their data in one place.
They want to reduce their SaaS tools. They want to reduce and consolidate data at like 2-3 places so that they can, when they want to invest more in agentic AI, the integration becomes easy. The integration tax is reduced because having so many vendors, so many tools at their disposal.
Most suppliers work on the network of the customer.
Correct.
So it's, I don't know how reducing vendors will make data more available to the customer, because the customer anyway owns their own data. So I'm not able to understand the question. But if your question is there vendor consolidation? Yes, there is vendor consolidation. In most customers who are using multiple suppliers, and we see this as a big opportunity because we feel we are right sized, we have the right capabilities, and we have the right AI frameworks to drive in efficiency in the process and win these longer term contracts. I think what we are looking for is more opportunity and a level playing field. If we can get that, we are very confident that our capability as well as our agility will get us business.
Understood. So the follow-up question to that is SaaS and software in the US, is the sentiment is that it will be cannibalized by all these AI, agentic AI, automated SDLC platforms. So what kind of revenues are we driving from platforms like Salesforce services or ServiceNow? And do you think that if AI platforms or SDLC, there are a lot of companies that we track, startups that we track or we're tracking right now, that are kind of cannibalizing some of the segments of the SaaS companies, listed SaaS companies in the US. So would it affect us as well, the downstream IT services?
Is Salesforce in your mind or in this context of our discussion, is that a SaaS company?
Not Salesforce. I would mention it as ServiceNow.
Okay, ServiceNow to you is a SaaS company, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now tell me, why will ServiceNow be cannibalized? Because somebody who's implemented ServiceNow, is spending a lot of money on licenses. They will continue to optimize their workflows, business workflows using ServiceNow. To switch out of ServiceNow to something like a managed engine requires a lot of tech services, which is positive for tech services. If you stay with ServiceNow, it's positive for tech services. So tech services, whether you stay with ServiceNow or you move to another provider like managed engine, as an example, will still provide revenue to a tech services company. Now, can you do without ServiceNow? Can you do without managed engine using agentic AI? As of now, you can't.
Correct.
So tech services is here to stay, unless I'm missing something.
Understood. So, okay, that answers my questions as of now. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vikash Srivastav from RBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my last question is, where do you see headcount trends and onshore-offshore trends, considering the increase in turnover, etc., and more outcome-based? Just some kind of assessment of where are we headed on headcount as compared to turnover and onshore-offshore headcount.
As of this point, because it will be proportional as revenue grows. So if revenue grows 4 times, headcount will go up 4 times. I think that's the rule of thumb we have to work with. Now, can AI, can outcome-based reduce that? It probably will, but for example, shared services. As our proportion of shared services and our revenue increases, then that will reduce the number of people in relation to revenue. But the flip side is, as the company grows, you need more people in support, you need more people in pre-sales, you need more people in sales, you know. So I think it's fair to say that for our size, if we want to go 4 times revenue, we will have to take our headcount to 12,000, you know. So that's on the first part. The second question was on-site, offshore. We ideally want to do a little bit more on-site, because on-site gives us 4 times the revenue of, you know, so we need 4 people onshore, or sorry, offshore, which is equal to 1 person on-site, you know. So our focus is to increase on-site for 2 reasons. One, revenue vis-a-vis headcount. And second, if you're working on-site with a customer, we also have more intelligence on that account. You know, because that person can give us more intelligence. If we have 1 person today and we increase that to 5, we'll have 5 people on the ground with the customer to give us more intelligence. So that's the plan.
Okay. Just one question. Then what kind of visas are we looking for? Are these, when especially if we are talking about the US now, and what kind of challenge would you face with visas? I'm assuming these are not H-1Bs.
No, H-1Bs have become too expensive at this point. So these will be either L-1s or local hires.
And what is the talent scarcity and availability for local hires here?
No problem of talent in the US for tech services.
Oh, good to hear. Okay, that was my last question. I'm sure you're not coming back in the queue though. Thank you.
No, you're welcome, Vikas. Welcome. Yeah.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in the interest of time, that was the last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
We thank everyone for taking out time to participate in this call and for their interest in SACSOFT. I hope we've been able to answer your queries. In case of any other queries, please reach out to us or our investor relations advisors, Valorem Advisors. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Thank you. On behalf of Monarch Networth Capital Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.